Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
You're listening to a Mint podcast brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hello everyone and welcome back to Why Not Mint Money. I am Sachin from Mint's personal finance team and today we talk about the importance of having a will. Experts say that most people don't leave a will when they pass away and that creates hassles for their heirs to transfer assets. In this episode, I invite Shilpa Phadke, CEO of Get Will Done. Get Will Done is a platform for creating will digitally. Here, Shilpa takes us through the journey of creating a will and how to transfer assets after someone passes away.
Welcome to Why Not Mint Money, a personal finance podcast where we help you understand basic money concepts and share strategies for you to build your wealth. So let's get started with your money journey.
Hi Shilpa, thank you for coming to the show.
Hi Sachin, glad to be here.
Yeah, so Shilpa, this is a very interesting topic, you know. I mean, can you guess how many people in India have a will before dying? I mean, I wonder if there is any number because whenever I talk to somebody, including CEOs, to doctors, to lawyers, I mean, most of them don't have a proper will. So, I mean, excluding lawyers, but of course, doctors and CEOs. But yeah.
Right. So, yeah, I suppose this percentage is quite less and it has to be somewhere around. I mean, let's consider the people who can make a will or rather have some sort of assets. I mean, we are only talking of those who are sort of eligible to make a will, which means they have some assets which they should be leaving behind for their legal heirs. So I suppose at this moment, my judgment would be anything between 30-40% of these must be actually making a will. And just that, so that, you know, it is not like because it's India, this percentage is low. Actually, even worldwide, and we were looking at the different markets in the world, and even otherwise, I think there is a discomfort, there is an inhibition in terms of coming forward to make a will, despite knowing very well that one needs to make one. And even in US, they say that almost only 50% of the people who should be making a will are actually making a will. So
yes.
It's not unique. What I meant is not unique to India. I think it's unique to humans, I would like to say, that nobody wants to really imagine that, what happens after I die.
Yeah, and I think it's how humans think also. It's very difficult to imagine we would suddenly pass away and our...
Absolutely.
Yeah, our kids or somebody, who our dependents might be scrambling for documents and stuff, but it happens, right? I mean, you never know.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And I think if anything, the COVID has really brought this to the forefront. And if people, or if all of us for that matter, were at some point in time never really imagining, it was a COVID was a jolt that we all no more find it very shocking, in the sense that, okay, well, anything can happen is an acceptance that we all have learned during COVID times.
That's true. I think COVID at some point has opened up people's eyes, saying life is uncertain and anything might happen. So I have this friend who I'm still in touch with, and her dad suddenly passed away when we were in class 12, and it was all out of a sudden. And after some time, unfortunately, her mom also wasn't doing quite well health-wise. So she was left on her own to figure out everything. And
to manage for herself.
Yeah. And the difficult part is it's true, right? Without a will, you can't even ascertain how much assets and how much bank balances, bank accounts your parents have. So just figuring out.
Absolutely. So, you know, I think a few these days, I have to say that there are the millennials who, let's say, are currently in the perfect age of, I would like to say that, of making a will, because they are in their 40s. In your 40s, you kind of have accumulated certain amount of wealth. You have reached a certain stage in your career. You at least have a house and a kind of a car and a few things, which and that's also the kind of, you know, age where one should be thinking about kind of making a will. But the parents, like you very correctly said, that a generation before them, many times the children wouldn't even know how many banks the father or the mother has the account. Forget about knowing what is the bank balance. But many times, even the grown-up children, and in your case, you are saying she was just in class 12, but even the grown-up children many times are not aware of the assets that are possessed by their parents. And just like you, I mean, I have a friend of mine who, of course, is not younger. He's in his 40s. And yet, when his father passed away and he was sort of cleaning up the house and doing that, he found several certificates and shares and others, which he didn't even know that they existed. So that's somehow the nature of the assets that we the parents and the other and the and people possess. So at least when you create a will, you are forced to arrange all of these in a manner. You are kind of required to collect these and document in and like a repository. So the will becomes your kind of a repository where at least at that given point in time, you have thought through everything that you possess and have put it on paper saying that, okay, this is what I have and I would like to leave it to my legal heirs.
Yeah, interesting. So for our viewers, before coming into the process of creating a will, which is also have some bit of complication in itself, let's first start with what happens if we don't have a will. So suppose our parents are there who have some accumulated some asset and they happen to pass away without any will. So what is the process after that? How does the asset get divided and what does the process look like without a will?
So, see, the without a will, if there is a person who has passed away, then obviously the whoever are the legal heirs have to go and make a claim to the different locations, in the sense that for the interest of our conversation, let's call it movable and immovable assets. So the immovable assets are obviously the house and property, land or anything that a person may possess. And in that case, the logical step is that you need, suppose the father passes away, then you need the house to be transferred in the daughter's or in the son's or the wife's name. And that is the first step that one has to take. If there is a flat, then it's a society, and the society has to take this action of transferring or the changing the name onto the legal heir's name, changing the house name into the legal heir's name. However, in absence of a will, they are going to ask you to go to court and obtain a succession certificate to prove that you are a legal heir. And we see this every day, that in normal course, they already know that you are the legal heir. I mean, the husband, wife and the children have been staying in that flat or a bungalow for years, and there isn't really a doubt in their mind. However, it's the process, and therefore, as part of the process, you have to go to the court, obtain a succession certificate. The succession certificate usually is a percentage of the value of the property. So if it's a bungalow or a flat, it will vary for each of these. And besides that, it's a time. I mean, you have to like wait for at least about 3 to 4 months or 3 to 5 months sometimes to get that succession certificate in your name. Also, there are different other they will ask you questions like, was you have to prove that the property was created by the deceased and not it's not a family transferred property, because in those cases there are different rules which apply to it. And therefore, the first step to claiming anything in absence of a will is to go to court, obtain a succession certificate. In case of financial assets, it is slightly, in the sense that slightly easier if there is a nominee who has been already defined. So if there's a nominee, bank or even the mutual funds and everywhere where we these days define a nominee, they will transfer these assets to the nominee. And then, of course, it is the nominee's responsibility by law to distribute the assets in the absence of will as per the customary laws or the Succession Act, which means that for, let's say, in case of Hindus, and it is it goes in equal parts to all the legal heirs.
So just to simplify for our readers, what Shilpa is trying to say is that if you don't have a will, then you have to go to a court to get a certificate, and that requires some charges, which depends upon which state you are. And if you don't have a will, your assets are divided according to customary laws or the religion laws, as you call it. So Hindus might have a different law pertaining to how assets are divided, and Muslims might have another way. So Shilpa, can you touch a little bit on how this framework works for Hindus and Muslim and the other category? Just like a brief overview of how it is divided in different religion laws.
So these are personal laws. I mean, for anyone based on the religion, and I'm not aware of the Muslim laws and how it of course it works as per the Sharia. There kind of a personal law comes into play. However, in all other cases, it is equally divided, like Hindus and Sikhs and Jains and all of that. It's equally divided in the legal heirs.
And Shilpa, one person in Twitter asked me, saying, so my parents has given a nominee's name as my elder brother's, in my elder brother's name. So in the mutual fund accounts, bank accounts, the nominee is given as somebody else. So is there any worry on their part to not have a name as the nominee?
No, if they are the legal heirs also, say his elder brother and they are two brothers, then nominee is just the custodian, and therefore the elder brother is supposed to, and if they, let's assume that there are two of them, and if they have a parent there, then there are three of them. In that case, the bank amount or whatever is the amount in the deposits or mutual funds is supposed to get equally divided between three or two, as may be the case.
Okay, so even if you are a nominee, doesn't mean you are entitled to the entire amount. You are responsible for dividing it as per what the law permits, right?
Oh, absolutely. Nominee is just the custodian of the asset, and as far as banks are concerned, they are kind of handing it over to the nominee, because that's the wished for. He named the person to be responsible for this asset in his or her absence, and therefore the nominee is not does not possess that property. He is just been handed over the property to distribute it lawfully, either there is a will which defines in what percentage they should get divided, or it follows the personal law.
So, Shilpa, in the next part, let's come to a family which indeed has a will. So, if somebody's parents passes away and they happen to have a proper will in their name, so how would the process look like? How would they go about transferring their houses, and how would they go about transferring their bank account, mutual fund units in the case of having a will?
So the will is a legal document, and therefore will is the succession plan that one needs to present to anyone to get the property or the asset transferred on in his or her name. So in the first part, we discussed that in case of transfer of a house, since there was no will, he or she was required to go and obtain a succession certificate from court. When you have a will, you need not go to the court most of the times, and I'll come to when sometimes you have to, but most of the times you do not have to go to the court. The will itself is the legal document, and it defines that in what percentage to whom the property or the assets should get transferred, and the institutions or the societies or the banks are supposed to be abiding by that and following that as the document to kind of distribute and transfer the asset. So society will transfer if the children are there and the parents have passed away, and the will says that the house should go to my son or daughter, then the society will do the necessary changes at their end. And thereafter, there is the procedure to be followed so that the corporation tax and other things, the name over there is changed. But the first part is, of course, that the society does change of name on the property. In case of bank, if there is a will, you go to the bank with the will and prove the identity of that you are the person mentioned in the will, and the bank is going to transfer that amount to the person defined in the will.
So, Shilpa, what you mean to say broadly is that if you have a proper will, then in most cases, you don't have to go to a court and do the rounds there. We all know how courts work and the process takes some time. So, do you mean to say in case of a will, we don't have to approach the courts and we can do it outside the court?
Yeah, absolutely right. I mean, most of the cases you will do it outside it, and that is why it is very, very important to make a will, which is, so see, the will is as such is a complicated document, and there are nuances that how one should be mentioning certain asset, what all details should be provided in that, and therefore it is very important that the will is made very meticulously. There is a legal kind of an expert legal brain which is behind making all of these, and that is when you will not require to go to the court. Because if the will is not made correctly and the person whom you are approaching for transfer of the asset in your name has any doubt, and that's where I was coming to, that most of the cases it won't, but if the bank or the society has a doubt in the manner in which the will has been written, the manner in which, if it is leaving some room for ambiguity, that it is not very clear that the asset should go to X or Y or Z, and in that case, they may still ask you to go to court, obtain a succession certificate, or if you have a will, then obtain a probate, and they will, because they as the only paper for transferring the assets, and therefore it becomes very important to have a properly drafted will which captures every details of it. It has a medical certificate attached to it at the time of when the will was made, to which proves that when the person made the will, he or she wasn't of sound mind, and there have to be the two witnesses. So if all of this is properly complete that is when you will not face any hassles and the process of transferring it will be smooth. And in any absence of any of these, obviously one has to then go through the entire process of court and succession certificate or probate and other things.
Yeah, so what this means is that it's not just enough to create a will. The thing is to make the will in a proper way by consulting with qualified professionals, and then write the will in such a way that there is no ambiguity after the person passes away. So Shilpa, coming to the next question, how should we make a will, or rather, what are the different types of will that are available to us, and how should someone go about drafting their will? Let's suppose some like our viewer has not been through the process ever in his life. So how should he go about making a will?
Okay. So as such, it's a long answer, but I will try to give a shot. So first of all, I'll just tell you, just for the sake of, you know, like to everyone to know what are the different kind of wills that are available. So primarily, there are two types of will which are recognized by the law, which is a privileged will and there is an unprivileged will. But besides that, there are joint wills, mirror wills, concurrent wills, then there are conditional or contingent wills, holograph wills. So there are different situations in which the wills are kind of defined. And I will just quickly... typically a will made by a soldier, okay, who is engaged in a war or he's on an expedition on the sea or something like that. That's what is called as a privilege will. Also, the privilege will can also be oral, but there are various conditions. So, and since this is not which is an unusual case, so we will not spend too much time on discussing the privilege will. A more common part I would like to talk about is a joint will. So, you know, when typically this is what happens in the families, that, you know, when there are two persons making a will, and typically these are like together. They belong, they possess a property, or then it is generally defined that while the makers of the joint will are alive, the will can be revoked by any of the makers. That's what it means, that if one of the or more of the makers have died, then the surviving, whoever is the person left behind, can revoke the will. Then there are mirror wills, which are also called as a reciprocal or the mutual will. So like the spouses usually have a property which are both belong to the two of them, and they can make the mirror wills, which means that, okay, husband and wife, and they cover both the situations, that either of them can die before, right? So they cover, the mirror will primarily covers this either of the situation. Then there is a concurrent will, when a person makes two or more wills. Each of it deals with a different subject matter. So let's say a person owns a business, or I mean, it doesn't have to be business. He or she can also create a separate will for movable assets, and they can also create for immovable properties, two completely different wills. Then there is something called a contingent will, which means that, okay, the will will take effect when a certain situation is happens. If it doesn't happen, then that will has got no meaning, right? So there are then, of course, the earlier, the way the wills were being made, these are called the holograph will, which means that the will is written in handwritten by the maker and he's actually writing that. And the minimal requirement for these this holograph will in most states are that the maker has the mental capacity to write. So that becomes a very, very important aspect to hold this will as a valid will in the court of law. So, there are plenty of types of wills. But like I mentioned, that the most common ones are the joint wills, the concurrent wills, the mirror wills. These are the ones which majority of us will actually make. And the rest of them are... kind of probably form a very, very small percentage of the types of will that are made.
Yeah, so this means that when somebody is making a will, it is very important to get a medical certificate saying that he was in a sound mental and physical condition to sign the will. So that part is very important. And the second part is that there are various kinds of wills that you can make in consultation with a proper lawyer, and that is the better option, because before there was people used to just write in a paper and sign, but there wasn't any a lawyer consulted for making the will, so there might be problem arising from that. So it's important that you get a medical certificate saying you were mentally sound while making the will, and the second part is of course how you draft the will.
Yeah, so the legal part is absolutely important, and if you actually go as per the legal part, then the medical certificate forms part of this, and that's exactly what the Get Will Done platform is, that we it's a platform created by the lawyers, and therefore it prompts you to create a provide the information which creates a legally valid will, and it kind of, you know, it's like having your personal lawyer to actually make the will, and it will force you to fill the information that is necessary, and it makes the process very smooth for your legal heir. So the legal aspect of it is probably the most important will which can be written on a piece of paper as well. But obviously, you do not know what have you missed in that. And you may think that a will is properly made. However, your legal heirs may eventually face a problem. So it has to be made with the legal advice. There are no two ways about it. And it has to be a legally valid will. So the legal aspect just cannot be ignored in this such an important document.
So Shilpa, one thing our viewers are very concerned about is how much money will it take to get a well-drafted will? So obviously it will vary from person to person, and the kind of asset and the complicated nature of the wealth he has. But I mean, for a normal person, saying either he is a teacher or he is a professor or he is a doctor, so for people like us, what will it take to make a will? Just some approximate.
So, if you go to a lawyer, like a physically, you hire a lawyer to do that. It can, like you very correctly said, depending on the situation, the asset, the how much assets are at stake and all of that, it can cost anything from 10,000 upwards for making a will with a lawyer. However, there are now the that I was talking about, the platform like ours, who are kind of in democratizing this process, because not everyone may want to hire a lawyer, but you still need a legal advice, and therefore a platform which is built built by the legal experts is something which can bring these prices down. I mean, you can then make it anywhere between, say, 3,000 to 5,000 is kind of a price range that it can come down to, without, because there's the physical part is not involved in it.
So Shilpa, one more thing is that would you recommend, in a will, some people like to give their assets to a foundation or for philanthropic purposes, right? And so how does that part work? Do we specify the organization we want to give the money in?
Yes, yes, absolutely. So the will includes, so you know, the how the will is written, and in a very simplistic form, that there are three major aspects to it, that you define who your beneficiaries are, what is the distribution among the beneficiaries that you would like to. So you define your assets, that you kind of make a repository or make a list of assets that you possess. Then you come to how many beneficiaries you would like to divide in this, and in what manner you would like to divide. So in the question that you have asked, these organizations, you want to give it to an NGO or something, are one of the beneficiaries. So you may want to leave some money to the NGOs or such an organizations, and therefore they become the beneficiaries of your will.
Got it. Shilpa, what can we do to avoid people contesting our will? So it so happens that if one of the dependents think that they are not receiving enough portion of the asset, then sometimes they get very upset and they tend to contest it. So how do we secure ourselves from people contesting our will?
So as such, there is no way, because even if you have a will, you have a registered will, it still can be contested in the court of law. So there is no answer to how can we protect. But like I said, the best case is always that you have a will, you have registered a will, you have left the will with an executor or someone, and registrar means there is also a copy with the registrar of your will. And therefore, any registered will along with the medical certificate registered in front of the registrar is kind of the most valid document that one can have. And of course, despite that, there is nothing that anyone can stop. But the chances of getting a decision in your favor because there is a properly registered will is definitely on the higher side. But whether you can protect from somebody contesting it, the answer is no. There is no one can stop anyone from contesting anything for that matter.
Yeah, so this just means that when you have a will, then the chances of people fighting over and contesting your property becomes little bit lesser, but people can still contest in the court of law. So Shilpa, before coming to my last question, I just wanted to ask, so for a person like me who is working, who has some amount in their bank account but doesn't have any direct dependents, is it advisable for people like us to create a will for ourselves?
Well, sure. I mean, you want to, if something happens, you would want something to have to happen to your assets, right? I mean, you may not have, say, direct dependents, but you may have parents. Or imagine like this, that it doesn't matter that you have any dependents, but you still have wealth. And if you don't do anything to that wealth, it's just going to lie there and it's not going to be of use to anyone. And therefore, in the just for this purpose, one should define that, okay, fine, I do not have any dependents on, but still if I something happens to me tomorrow, I would want to leave whatever little assets I have to someone. And that someone is could be your friend, it could be a charity organization, it could be your parents, or it could be some distant relative or anything. But the point is that if you do nothing about it, then the asset is just lying there and is of no use to anyone. So just this aspect itself should kind of, you know, prompt you to get and make a will.
So the message here is that it's advisable to create a will, and if you haven't already, then everyone should consider making a will to avoid the hassle of your dependents who are going to claim your assets after you die. So with that, thank you, Shilpa, for coming to the show, and hope to see you again.
Thank you very much. This was fun. Thank you. Thanks a lot. And I hope that the viewers take a message and just get well done.
That brings us to the end of today's episode. If you would like to know more about this topic, then you can reach out to me on Twitter. I go by the username @SachinNJ or LinkedIn using my full name, that is Sachin Ningthau Khongjam. We would be happy to take your suggestions. That's all from our side. Thanks for tuning in. See you in the next episode.
To stay updated on this podcast, follow us at HD Smartcast on all the major social media platforms. To listen to more such podcasts, log on to www.hdsmartcast.com.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.